Hey, thank you, Ira. we are very lucky that the airlines worked out and Dr. Kathy Magruder was able to make it up here this morning. Dr. Magruder works at the Charleston, South Carolina VA Medical Center and is professor in the Departments of Psychiatry and Public Health Sciences at the Medical University of South Carolina, where she also serves as the director of the Office of Research Integrity. Kathy?
Thank you. I feel very lucky indeed to be here because between the sequester and the airlines, it's been quite a day. So I would also like to thank in advance the VA Health Services Research and Development who reviewed and funded this project very generously, I might add, and thanks to the collaborators, just some of whom you can see listed here. Sadly, I have nothing to disclose. I wish I did, but when I think about the motivation for this project, it feels like kind of a perfect storm to me. We've heard from our other speakers about the unacceptably and sustained high rate of suicide among veterans. The VA has been involved in really ramping up hiring for mental health professionals. So literally thousands of new mental health providers have come on the rolls in the last 4 or 5 years. And yet we know that gaps exist in the kind of training that mental health providers receive to deal with suicidality. And we know that training to manage and treat suicidality can improve attitudes, knowledge, confidence, and competence, as well as decrease fears and myths about treating suicidal patients. One of the programs that has been very popular for training people to deal with suicidality is called CAMS, or the Collaborative Assessment and Management of Suicidality. This is a program that's developed by David Jobes, a psychologist. It's been cited as an effective suicide-specific intervention. It's recommended as a best practice. And the training is typically delivered in a kind of one-day program to a small group of about 20 clinicians. I think one thing that makes it particularly attractive for adoption by the VA is that it doesn't depend on your discipline, so you could be a psychiatrist, a social worker, a psychologist, nor does it depend on your treatment orientation. So you could be more of a CBT kind of a person or a PE, or I'm not even sure I know all of the different treatment options that providers have these days, but it can be kind of overlaid on top of any of those orientations. So we wanted to find a way to get more people trained up, a more efficient way of training VA providers. So we developed an e-learning version of CAMS. It's a good learning modality for adult learners that kind of fits in with very busy clinical practice. And we aimed to compare provider outcomes for an e-learning group, an in-person group, and then a no-training control group. In addition, we wanted to compare patient outcomes for the same three groups. And our overall questions that we were asking are, is CAMS, this method for training, is the e-learning as effective as the in-person method? And note that we're asking that as an equivalence hypothesis. We just wanted them to be as effective. We didn't hypothesize that one would be better than the other. And then secondly, are the either of the CAMS conditions, training conditions, more effective than a no-training condition? So we recruited 5 sites to participate with us. Our lead investigators at each site recruited mental health providers and consented them to participate. After they had consented and taken a little pretest, they were then randomly assigned to one of our 3 conditions. There was a course evaluation that took place immediately following either of the CAMS condition for any VA providers, and here you'll recognize it's a typical kind of, was the environment good, were the objectives achieved, very benign kinds of questions like that. Then we also did a knowledge and attitudes test. We did that before either of the conditions, immediately after, and then a long-term, 3 months out test to assess if knowledge and attitudes changed over time and were sustained over time. Lastly, we conducted a chart abstraction of suicide high-risk patients to assess provider adherence to these CAMS principles and patient outcomes in terms of their visit rates and in terms of their suicidality. So, just to kind of recap, the two active conditions were the CAMS in-person, and this was the very traditional in-person delivery, one-day workshop. Providers got the permission of their supervisor, and the time was blocked. It was held on-site at their particular VA. Dr. Jobes came and did his spiel, and at the end of that, if they stayed for the whole time, they got 6.5 credits. They also received the CAMS manual, and they were eligible to participate in coaching sessions. So we had 6 of these in order to kind of deal with the idea that people might have questions that would come up after they had taken either of the e-learning or in-person courses. So there were about 6 sessions that were scheduled about 2 or 3 weeks apart at a lunchtime, and the telephone number was widely publicized so people could call in and ask Dr. Jobes, you know, any particular question that they might have that might arise either from their treatment of a patient or just in their review of the material. The e-learning was a 4-module course with the same content as the CAMS in-person. There were videos that had been shot that were included in this. As with the e-learning, participants could block 6.5 hours to complete this, again with their supervisor's approval. The 6.5 hours didn't have to be all at one time, but they could block them whenever they wanted to. And this course material was available on the internet for 4 weeks. At the same 4 weeks immediately following when the in-person had been delivered at that site. They also got 6.5 credit hours, they also received the CAMS manual, and they also could do the coaching component. So the only difference really was in the modality of the material and how that was the delivery of the treatment material. And then the control condition, of course, had no training. However, those who completed the immediate post-assessment received a textbook on mental health emergencies and how to deal with them, and we checked and there were no CAMS specific content chapters in that. So our participants, we had 2 sets of participants. The ones I'll focus on today are the mental health clinicians. Eligibility included anyone who provided outpatient care to mental health patients, so any discipline was eligible: psychiatrists, psychologists, nurses, social workers, case management. They could not have had any previous CAMS training, and of course they provided informed consent. Trainees who were going to see patients were also eligible. We thought we might cast the net as widely as possible there. Patients who were eligible were those who were flagged in the VA. I don't know if any of the earlier presenters covered this, but there's a flag that goes up for patients who were thought to be suicidal, and it's very clear in the record who they are. So any patient who had that flag at any time during the year following any of the training conditions and who had been a patient of any one of the study clinicians was considered eligible. So this is just a screenshot of the e-learning condition, and it gives you on the left-hand side a little bit of an indication of the processes we went through to develop the e-learning. I will say that it was an ambitious, we had no idea what we were getting into. It was a very ambitious project to convert this over, but I think we did pretty well with it. Participants. I mentioned we had 5 sites, all in VISN 7. There were a total of 309 eligible mental health providers, and of those, 230 consented. So you can do the math, but that's a pretty good participation rate. I mean, I wish we could do that well with patients that we recruit for studies. And of the 230 who consented, 212 took the pretest and were therefore randomized. Of those who were randomized, you'll see in the table, there were approximately equal, a few more completed the in-person condition, 51 compared to 45. We had some partial completers, and then a group of bad children who never even initiated the training, 13 in e-learning and 18 in in-person. And of course, control didn't have any, so they were all considered completers. Do I have a pointer at all? Maybe not. Oh, well. So the first thing I've mentioned that we collected was this training evaluation, and these were the typical questions of how was the environment, you know, blah, blah. And as you can see from this, I think people with the in-person were generally a little more satisfied with the training situation. However, do look at logistics. E-learning logistics were definitely better. And if you look at the content, there's kind of a narrower difference there, 88.9% compared to 91% viewed that positive. So we thought that was, if you had to have one that was closer together, that was a good one to have. The content they felt was good. Yes. Oh, you do have a. Thank you. Thank you. I can work it now. Yeah, good. So then we did the questionnaire. There were approximately 20 questions on this questionnaire, and it was designed to assess their confidence, their knowledge, and kind of attitudes about treating suicidal patients. And so recall that we did this before they took the training, immediately after they took the training, and 3 months later, and at equivalent time points for the control condition. So this is a comparison across time for the three groups. And what I've done is I've just summarized those questions that had anything that was significant. And you'll see, just to orient you, this is the baseline versus the immediate post test, and this is the baseline versus the three-month post test. Well, focus right here first on the totals, and you'll see that in that, for the total, and that was all 20 questions added together, the e-learning was significantly better than the controls, and the in-person was also significantly better than controls. So that was our kind of first big hypothesis, that they would be better, but equivalent. They were not different from each other. And then there were some individual questions. You can see the confidence questions here, where both e-learning and in-person were better. The ability to develop safety plan and belief in hospitalizations, again, were better for everyone, better than control, and this one, intervention better than control, and e-learning better than intervention. And then this one, e-learning better than intervention, and intervention better than control. So there were a few little variabilities there, but, you know, for the most part, both conditions were better than control. However, when you look out here at the baseline versus 3 month, you'll note that there were some lingering, and note that that's a p less than 0.10. So I wouldn't really call that significant, more of a trend that the e-learning did have some lingering effects here in the ability to develop a coping plan and beliefs about hospitalization and patients taking an active role, but everything else pretty much disappeared there at the 3 month point. So still in progress is our evaluation of the patient outcomes, and the patient questions are designed to look at the extent to which providers adhere to the CAMS guidelines. So we're going into each of the patient records and evaluating that. And the second big item there is to look at the health services use patterns based on whether the provider was a CAMS provider, an experimental provider, or not. So these are analyses in progress. So in conclusion, I think we would say that we had really good participation rates, which to me shows a willingness on the part of very busy clinicians to participate in an optional program. We had slightly more e-learners to initiate the course, but slightly more in-person participants completed the course. Now, of course, we don't know were the in-person people dozing or playing with their Blackberries or doing other things, but they did complete. The course evaluations were slightly higher for the in-person learners, but both e-learners and in-person learners had stronger beliefs and confidence immediately following the training. But there was a trend that for the e-learners at 3 months, but only a trend for some few questions. So we feel like we kind of broke new ice here by developing an e-learning approach to training for suicidality. I think we were naive in thinking that this 1 6.5-hour course would really, either in person or e-learning, would really be sustainable. So I think the next steps probably ought to be to figure out how to support really busy clinicians to sustain what they've learned here, and also how to integrate that truly into practice, whether that would be sort of having some groups of clinicians who are actively treating suicidal patients to get together and think about some of these principles and how they're putting them into practice. I think that's up to clinicians to help to try to design that kind of thing, but I think that's something that was clearly lacking in this project. So that last shot is, I was just in Havana about 2 weeks ago, and thank goodness our mental health clinics don't look quite that bad. So thank you very much. Do we have questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy, for all you've been through this morning. You're coming through and doing a very nice job. I just got to say, you know, a lot of times we see in the media these days that, you know, the VA isn't doing enough and this is such a problem. We're not minimizing the problem in any way, but I think these are great examples that the VA is working very strongly, very hard in trying to address this problem. And it's there's a lot of very good work that's going on, and I think the work of these investigators will keep moving us forward. I think we're right about time, but if anybody has any questions for the investigators, and I do, please again fill out the evaluations and leave them in the back. But